2CC Mike Welsh Podcast.
The CSIRO has been in the news, and it wouldn't be very happy about being in the news the way it's been in the news for the last couple of weeks. Allegations of campaigns against individuals who speak out or have a problem, or seem to be a problem. In other words, a toxic workplace, bullying and harassment being the main allegations. I've spoken to several people who've given their stories, and there's a site, Victims of CSIRO, .com, which has been set up, and they tell me the visits to that in the last couple of weeks have gone through the roof. Statistically, there are many people who were, prior to that, unable or unwilling to speak out or do something about their particular situation, and now feeling a little bit more comfortable. Spoke to a bloke a couple of nights ago who lives out of the country, no longer works for CSIRO, did up until 2009. But what brought about his problem, and there are two issues to hear, he wrote a paper criticising the merits, or challenging the merits, of carbon schemes, basically. It was called the Brave New World of Carbon Trading, emissions trading schemes, whatever you like to call it. But it was critical. Now, there's a bit of a problem, as you understand. In 2009, the then Prime Minister Rudd was pushing the hell out of this concept up to a point. And the CSIRO decided that the paper was not a good idea because it's the government of the day would not be very keen to have it published, given that it was negative. Now, this scientist now works overseas, but when he challenged his inability to have it published, a campaign began of harassment and intimidation and just basically something you'd see in a schoolyard, as you'll hear him explain. Now, this is something, there's a fair bit of work involved, firstly, on how the paper has been released since, but the CSIRO doesn't want anything to have with it. But the important part of this story is, or the guts of it is, how the CSIRO management deals with people who step out of line.
Well, the paper was started 18 months before, and I had a co-author originally. He withdrew under pressure after several visits from people. He decided to phone me up and said he couldn't take it and he would withdraw and he was worried about losing his job.
So the pressure on him already, so they probably knew your outcomes. Your outcomes were essentially emissions trading schemes don't really work, but of course at that stage in 2009, the government was very excited about emissions trading schemes. So they tell you, your superiors tell you it's not going to be published. You dig your heels in, I presume, and that's when the campaign you felt began.
The pressure slowly builds up, basically. So the person who was calling the shots refused to meet with me, and I ended up with just my acting chief of division, who was passing messages to me from higher up. And then basically when they got to the point that they realised I wasn't going to shift, that I actually wanted to publish this privately, if they wouldn't let it be published. They sent me a letter one day banning it, and the very next day, within 24 hours, I get a letter of misconduct, claiming misconduct.
That you weren't doing your job properly, or you were breaking or breaching rules or regulations?
Oh, yeah.
Are they specific?
Not doing your job properly. Yeah, things like not filling in a holiday leave form. And not having done your travel expenses properly, or not being, when I was on holiday.
So, in other words, the campaign to pressurise you had begun. What did it go from that?
Well, I tried to get the staff association involved because I was a member of the staff association. Yeah. The local,
were they
the local
keen?
Guy was no. The local guy was very good. My local contact was very good, but I tell you, the guys higher up were useless. They didn't support me at all. I was told I had that this letter of misconduct was totally unacceptable. None of the issues had ever been discussed with me before. And then suddenly what I find is that the staff association just doesn't do anything.
So
I even had a meeting with Megan Clark where Sam Popovsky was present as my representative to represent me. And he basically sided with Megan Clark and the management.
So you realised by that stage that there was a campaign against you?
Yeah, and I wasn't going to get any help from the likes of Borges and Popovsky and the staff association.
Where did it go from there?
Well, then what happened was the paper was basically banned, and under the CSIRO policy, you're allowed to present work. Because they'd had a whole bunch of issues about this a few years before. You can present work if it's not associated with CSIRO. So I presented it at a conference and made very clear this was not a CSIRO paper. And I gave myself an affiliation like an independent researcher.
Yeah.
And of course, some people asked me why. And I said, because the CSIRO doesn't want to publish this work. And then it hit the newspapers the next week.
Yeah. So the campaign, the pressure on you to make you feel so bad and isolated, and then you would leave. But how bad did that get?
So then what happened was basically Megan Clark got involved as the head of the organisation. Mm-hmm. I had meetings with her where she told me that the paper would be published. It needed minor changes. Mm-hmm. But then within 5 days, I was sent a copy. Basically, they organized a meeting and they handed me a bunch of corrections, which I had never seen, and said, you were going to accept these. Mm. And I said, I need to read them. So then I was told, well, okay, you've got 4 hours, something like that. Mm. This is a Friday afternoon. I said, look, no way, I need the weekend. So then I was told, 9 o'clock, first thing, Monday morning. So it's that kind of pressure. And then when I didn't accept them on the Monday morning, 6 o'clock that evening, a meeting with Megan Clark, the head of the organization, head chief of divisions, and a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And then they tried to just bully you into accepting it.
Yeah, but how did they go about that?
It's just the attitude and the whole statements that people make. You know, it's like being called into the schoolroom. You're a naughty boy and you're going to, and you're told blank out, you will accept these changes.
Yeah.
You will not be able to publish this paper. Do you understand the policies? You will repeat after me.
But what was the tone? Was the tone aggressive?
Oh, yeah.
You're saying
totally.
You will. I mean, was someone standing, pointing a finger, standing over you?
This is done by teleconference.
Mm-hmm.
It's done by the telephone.
Yeah.
So it's like three people sitting in the room, and then there's other people who are higher up who are phoning in.
Mm. So how were you feeling after that, psychologically?
Well, I mean, you feel quite devastated, obviously, by that sort of... One, just the treatment, that people can think that they can treat you like that, you know, and the whole attitude of it is quite amazing. And then, of course, you feel, well, what can you do? What you know, this is the top of the people at the top of the whole organization. I mean, my only recourse after that is a whistleblower report, which I did do a whistleblower report.
Yeah.
And that went nowhere as well.
That would have only made it worse for you.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically, once you've done the whistleblower report, then they're fully out for you, aren't they?
Yeah. So you resigned shortly afterwards, or did you try and stick
it
out?
I decided I was going to stick it out, and then I just decided that this wasn't worth it. And I just, I mean, my health was, getting bad. Mm. You start getting paranoid. I mean, you know that they're monitoring all your emails, that your telephone is being monitored, everything's being monitored. So at this stage, you just get out.
So what do you think that is done? Is that done to check on you or just to remind you that they can play with your head?
They can just, I think they do it for two reasons. One is they're trying to put pressure on you psychologically. I mean, that's what they do.
Mm.
So they try everything to harass you and to make you feel totally insecure. And, you know, things like I get a message telling me that if I go away, I have to call in every 24 hours, stuff like that. You know, that you're continually monitored. You're going to be continually watched. We know that you're going to be a problem for us, so therefore we're going to watch you. It's that kind of stuff.
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
Was it bizarre behavior for you?
Yeah, that's why I got out. I thought this is totally bizarre.
So you felt that something awful might happen to you? It's border on evil, isn't it?
Well, I think it's, these people who are these bullies are basically insecure people in themselves.
Well, that's extraordinary. To me it is that people of this caliber making contributions... are treated this way, but it's right across the board. The bloke we spoke to last week worked in a completely different area. He was an installer of appliances, for example, but had a problem, and then, of course, there they go. They just work on him. That's got to stop. It's bad. Victims of CSIRO is the site.com, and you can get information there. Now, I think we've put three calls in now to Senator Evans, who would be, normally make a comment on this. They know what it's about. I've told them what it's about, and I will not stop. I'll just keep on going. Clearly, they don't want to address this. The organisation, as you know, last week, thanks to an article in the Canberra Times, suggested that it, the CSIRO, look at the ways, or improve the ways, they deal with these complaints and work their way back through them, so as you don't have so many people who are devastated by harassment and bullying in the system, which has been described as toxic.